former state senator, still rabble-rouser. How are you, Thomas?
I'm doing well, Todd. How about yourself?
Well, I'm trying to figure out, was FDR, when he laid out the Communist Manifesto of his administration in 1944, the second Bill of Rights, designed to undo the U.S. Constitution, was his goal ideological? Was he a communist who wanted to ruin America? Or was he just the original of the plunderers who foresaw a beautiful day in which Democrats could win elections even when they were decimating a wonderful affluent state like Connecticut?
Well, I think it's the latter. I mean, FDR was just too wealthy with his inherited wealth to be an actual Red. There were, back in those days, Todd, and there's a lot of interesting reading on this, there were a lot of trendy Marxists in America in the 20s and 30s and even in the 40s. And a lot of that came to an end as soon as they realized that the gulags were real and that Stalin had actually killed tens of millions of people. There was sort of a trendy intellectual communist. I don't think he was one. He certainly had some people on and off during his very lengthy administration who were on that side of things.
Mm-hmm. So this is the 50s we shouldn't think of as an event unto itself, but there was more of a wave that would rise and fall based on the environment and whether it was safe to poke their heads up above water.
Oh, I think so. I mean, there were still true believers in the 50s, actual agents. I mean, the Rosenberg trial is a perfect example. I mean, those two got the Ethel and what's his name? I forget her husband's name. They got the gas chamber for turning over our nuke secrets to the Soviets. So, yeah, there were real agents. These were American citizens who weren't just doing it for the money. They were true believers. They believed that communism was the utopian ideology as being pronounced by Marx.
It's interesting how anyone could envision utter economic oppression as being utopia. How does that work?
Well, I don't think it does. And in modern days, we need look no further than Cuba and Venezuela to get a pretty good sense of what happens under true Marxist ideology, and to a lesser extent now the old Soviet Union. I mean, they're going back to a lot of their old habits there in Russia.
Yeah, and the Democrats are as well. So it's curious to me, though, how this stuff ever has this kind of revolutionary appeal that it does, when there was a great, humane, compassionate revolution that went on in this country, and the left has never liked it. What's that all about?
Well, it's one thing to be a wealthy, trendy Red back in the 20s and 30s when there was an intellectual curiosity about it, whereas now we have the evidence. I mean, there was not as much evidence back then as there is now as to what the ideology actually brings for societies and the suffering and deprivation and so forth. Today, there's no excuse. I just have to say that young people that are embracing this stuff now, they're just knuckleheads. I mean, all they need to do is read a little history to realize how bad it is and what a dagger in the heart of freedom and liberty it is. You know, just like the this conversation you were having earlier about justice. That's a great conversation, by the way. But the word justice and the concept is being diluted in America by a lot of the same knuckleheads. Social justice, economic justice, environmental justice, worker labor justice. It dilutes the word. You know, the word is a great word. I mean, justice, as contemplated in our U.S. and state constitution, is about leveling the playing field. It's not about activism. It's not about government handouts.
It's not about guaranteed outcomes.
No, absolutely not. And if you look at Webster, I mean, it's pretty clear. It's the administration of justice to try to create a blind, level playing field and truly help those who are aggrieved in a legal sense, whether it's criminal or civil.
All right, Tom Scott, hold on a sec. We'll get a quick traffic and weather update and then continue the conversation. Oh, yeah. That's good. WTIC, someone won the tickets, I take it. Lots of phone calls for BJ Thomas. June 29th. We'll give away more tickets tomorrow. 860-522-9842. We're talking to the great Tom Scott. Let's just listen to a little bit of the Communist Manifesto as written and laid out for us in 1944 by FDR. Wait, he's not playing. Let's try it again.
The right of every farmer to raise and sell his products.
This is his second Bill of Rights. And if you listen, the reason these are patently un-American and designed to undo the U.S. Constitution to create the kind of pay-your-voter model that exists today that destroyed the state of Connecticut, what he's up to is making a list of things the government owes you because you were born here, other than what the founders created, which was a society where you were protected from the government taking your things.
At a return which will give him and his family a decent living.
That's for the farmer.
The right of every businessman, large and small,
large and
to trade in an atmosphere of freedom, freedom from unfair competition and domination by monopolies at home or abroad.
So the promise to protect business from domination, he doesn't mention the insidious force of the most dangerous special interest group in the world, the government, which he wanted to enhance. And that's why that stuff is dangerous. Tom Scott. Yes, sir.
Well, you know, I have to say, in the context of what he was saying in the aftermath of the Great Depression, I think the words were aspirational as opposed to legislative, let's say.
Well, he set them out as a second Bill of Rights, and it's a part of a long list in which people should be guaranteed.
He did. And look, I carry no brief for FDR, but I will say this about monopolies, though.
Mm-hmm.
Conservatives really ought to oppose concentrations of power wherever they're found.
No, you're correct. You're correct.
It's big government,
yep.
Whether it's
big
monopolistic
is bad.
Companies like the railroads in the old days, and mm-hmm. steel companies and all that, are big labor. So there are times when we can join forces, although the modern Democratic Party doesn't reflect any of those values that even FDR was advocating back in those
But
days.
Wait a sec, Tom. What you're making is a Democratic argument. You're making an argument for Democratic values.
Small
that
D,
is...
Small D.
That, yes, that is that if there are huge entities that are sucking too much life out of the economy and too much political power out of what is supposed to be a system that belongs to the people, that's a bad thing. So that bad thing can be Google, that bad thing can be the SEIU, that bad thing can be the state of Connecticut. And those things are anti-democratic forces. So it's important to make that differentiation if you're going to sound like you're jumping on the bandwagon.
And completely consistent with our first principles. If you read very carefully the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, all the documentation that was written by the authors at that time, the Federalist Papers and so forth, you'll see that opposition to massive concentrations of power was contemplated by the founders and something we ought to embrace today.
Yeah. So the cool thing about what you're saying is that this defines the difference between left and right. The left has become the machine of oppression. They want huge governmental entities that control everything. That's why they're always spreading hate on successful people and corporations, because those are the things that protect us from government and give us liberty. And government now is the thing chasing all of what we've achieved and trying to suck it all up for themselves so they can control it, so they can rig everything.
Yeah, sadly, Todd, that's largely correct. And my
what do you mean largely?
Well, I would say this though, because I you know me, I'm the optimist, right? I still think that there's hope to slowly turn things around. But here's where I get very, very nervous, mm-hmm. And that is the spontaneous questions that I ask young people from time to time. When I say young people, I mean teenagers through, you know, let's say their 20s.
Okay.
If you ask them basic questions about the founding of this country and the heroes that we've all known as kids and what they did or didn't do for that matter, the unbelievable amount of ignorance that I find among otherwise very bright young people is scary. And we don't teach enough about the founding of this country and why the Constitution is not a living, breathing document subject to the change of unelected judges. And it's very hard for us to make a case ideologically, philosophically, about freedom and liberty, whether it's economic freedom or freedom generally or liberty generally, when so many young people are being propagandized by everything that's being thrown at them today in colleges and high schools and in the media, that government, if you say to a young, here's the test. If you say to a 21-year-old, or let's say a 17-year-old, where do your rights come from? You would be horrified, Todd, to see the percentage of young people who say their rights come from government. That is scary.
Well, they haven't heard of God.
Well, even if they're believers, they've been propagandized since a very young age that the reliance on government is so paramount to everything else that, of course, my rights must come from government, as opposed
right.
to
everything, because everything comes from government. Government takes everything; government giveth everything.
So that's a lesson. I mean, I say this to older people all the time: before you leave this earth, if you have young people in your sphere of influence, nieces, nephews, grandchildren, please tell them the truth about this country, because if you don't, there's a good chance no one else will.
All right. We've just got a minute left, Tom. Tell us about tolls. Where are we at?
Well, look, I heard our good friend Len Susio on here earlier, and we need to take to heart what he said. And we can't rest on our laurels. And thanks, Len, for the history lesson. because what we don't see is what's going on behind closed doors and those dark corners at the Capitol and over dinner and over drinks as these legislators are being wined and dined by the governor and by special interest groups. Remember, it's not just the governor. It's not just the Speaker of the House. It's all these left-wing special interest groups who want more money. They all have influence, and they're talking to these Democrats every day.
Yeah, so beware.
Beware, and if you haven't called your senator and rep yet, it's not too late.
Tom Scott, always great to talk with you, sir. Thank you so
Anytime.
Much. All right, we'll talk to you next week. Tom Scott, former state senator, still an activist, still out there fighting the plunderers.